Welcome back to another episode of the Reseller's Mindset Podcast. My name is Mike, also known as a used book guy on YouTube, along with my friend and fellow full-time reseller, Johnny B. We help people start and grow their reselling businesses from the ground up. We also have a weekly Zoom call and private Discord for all YouTube members. Head on over to youtube.com/usedbookguy to join the channel and gain access to the full-length podcast, Zoom call, and private Discord today. Let's get into this week's episode.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Reseller's Mindset Podcast. Mike next to Johnny. Today, a fun topic, cheating in reselling. I think it is a necessity to cheat, in air quotation marks, if you're not watching on the YouTube, in reselling to have great success and sustainable success. So I guess I'll go first here since I'm already going off my little tangent of cheating. And it all comes down to having conversations and turning those conversations into long-going, basically, relationships with supply that you need to sell. So if you think about it in terms of how would I cheat in comparison to Johnny? So Johnny is a thrift store guy, right? He's not. This is just hypothetical. He relies on thrift stores, right? He's got his, you know, his local stores he goes to. Well, I stumble in one day and I talk to the manager and I say, hey, you know, I have a huge business and I'll buy everything you have. You don't have to worry about sorting it in the back room. You don't have to worry about pricing it, dealing with any of that type of overhead cost, whether that's labor or financial. Then next time Johnny shows up, it's all the same stuff. There's nothing new. He comes back a month later and it's all the same stuff. And it's all going to me now. And in Johnny's eyes, he may be pissed. And I do think there's a lot of resellers that have this mindset of if somebody's in the back room, like it's cheating because it's unfair. But the reality is you have to adapt in this business. And the days of just walking in a thrift store and keeping to yourself and, you know, not having conversations, I think they're long gone. So I think that's the biggest aspect of cheating that I think people need to start doing. I don't care what you sell. I don't care if you sell lamps. I don't care if you sell shoes, books, whatever it is. There's conversations to be had so that every single lamp that comes in the back room, they set it aside for you. You get a text message, and then all of a sudden, you at least get to see the stuff before it even hits the sales floor. So that's kind of the big one that I wanted to throw out there when it comes to, you know, people that thrift and feel like there's nothing in the stores. Well, what if I told you that the stores you were going in, somebody like me or Johnny was already in the back room looking at everything? Like, duh, there's not going to be anything because we're going to take all the good stuff.
Yeah, I skip that backroom stuff. I just take it home to my bookshop here. There's not even anything in the back room once I go, honestly. And I've done that before. I don't do it as much because I have other sources that are, well, stuff comes to me these days, more or less. Okay, as far as that was a good one, Mike. As far as another avenue of cheating, so you get a box of books. In these box of books, they've never been opened in pristine condition. Now, you and I, and the person who sold it to you, know these are not technically new. They didn't come off the printing press from the manufacturer. They just never got bought. They never got read. They sent the shelf. There's not even a crease mark in it. Not even a tiny one in the corner. In my opinion, and this is a moral integrity question, look at the Amazon things and make a call for yourself. But for me, I would send those items in as new. Just like me buying a DVD, well, little harder to do because books don't come in shrink wrap, but DVDs and CDs do. If it's got the Y fold in it, could send it in as new. It is technically new, even though you may have picked it up from a thrift store. Now, if Amazon ever calls your number on it and they're asking you to produce a receipt, you ain't got it because the receipt they'll want you to provide, you're not going to have that. So there is a risk assessment in there. But most people are going to put even that shrink thing in used, or the books are going to put them in used condition. But at least for me on the books, I've decided those are new. Books never came in shrink wrap. Nobody can dispute it outside of Amazon. Like, yo, where's your receipt? That's my opinion on that. That's another way to quote unquote cheat.
Yeah, that's a good one. There's basically ways within the categories you sell to get a leg up or do something different. I think that's, you know, we could also just say, you know, title this, do something different, because everything we're talking about, it's not the typical, you know, I'm gonna go like the Goodwill bins. Like you could, we all have the people that sit at the Goodwill bins all day, whether you love them or whether you hate them. I'm not a fan of it. I just think it's idiotic. Why not cut out the middleman of the Goodwill bins? Well, Mike, how do I cut out the Goodwill bins? Well, how does the stuff get to the Goodwill? At all, you got to go upstream. Why does every, explain to me, Johnny, why does everybody look at the end of the line before the stuff is through in the through the incinerator to try to buy something?
Because it's cheap and people don't want to pay up, even though they're going to get the same margins if they were to pay up. Well, maybe not the exact same margins, but you're going to get bigger quantity of higher margin stuff if you pay up before it arrives at the Goodwill bins, one step away from the recycler. And at the recycler, well, it's doomsday for those items. They're either getting shipped away or burned away. But yeah, you got to think about it. Where do thrift stores get their items? It's from estate sales normally, the leftovers, or other donations, people clearing out their house and stuff. So another contribution on this, well, I'm now a donation center. I literally have a bookstore. Things get donated to me constantly. So I don't even need to go to the thrift store because I am the thrift store, quote unquote, at least for books. But we're probably going to be expanding into Dis Media too. So now I'll have Dis Media come to me because I am, again, the thrift store.
I think we have to get away from this mentality that we only want to pay a penny or a quarter or a dollar per item. I think that you're only hindering yourself by where you're willing, where you're not willing to go, right? You're not willing to go into an actual bookstore and maybe pay $3, $4 for a book. You're not willing to go into Plato's Closet and pay, you know, $5, $10 for a vintage t-shirt. It's like we can only pay per pound at the Goodwill bin because we have no money because we're resellers and resellers are broke, even though our margins are through the roof. I think that whole mentality just needs to be flipped up on upside down 100%. The idea, if I told any reseller you could get better quality stuff if you paid more for it, as much as I would like to sit here and say they all would say yes, I guarantee you some, nah, I'm fine with, you know, picking through the dollar trash stuff and not going upstream. But for some reason, it's like thrift stores are the only way. Well, the stuff's got to get to the thrift store. Why not? Why aren't you that person? Just look at the junk cleanout companies. Like, there's so many of them anymore because everybody wants all their stuff gone. You can literally be a version of that in some way, shape, or form for the items you want to sell. And that, you get collections, you get better quality stuff. But unfortunately, Johnny, you can't pay a dollar no more. You're going to have to pay
Oh
maybe
yeah, no.
$2. I
Oh
know,
no.
dude. I don't understand the mentality behind the. We were only willing to spend a dollar. We're never going to spend more than $10 on an item at a thrift store. I can't wrap my head around it. We just refuse to do it. It's like we should have the margin in a reselling business to be able to be like, okay, I'm gonna buy more expensive items. Or if you come across something, it's not like, oh man, well, what if I buy this $50 new in box Sony, you know, VCR and then it gets returned and then I lose money? Like, that you're just screwing yourself over.
A couple of things here. I mean, the paying up, I've mentioned this before, over in Caleb's channel, the guy did Scout IQ. They did an interview with the guy, and he was talking about him and all the other booksellers were going to half price books, but everybody was going to the clearance rack. He decided one day, I'm going to explore the rest of the store. And his average buy cost that day was $15 a book. But in less than a year's time, he made over $250,000 profit. Outside of all of his expenses. And I thought to myself, smart man, because everybody else was at the bargain bin and he went to the rest of the store where all the books are. And the other key thing I think you said, because I've seen it time and time again in multiple groups when we're talking about books. And I ask, have you ever actually been to an honest to God bookstore? And the answer is always no. Like, why not? It's a building full of the material you want, an entire building dedicated to books. It's not just a rack. It's not just a couple shelves. It's an entire building of it. And
It's
it just
scared
blows my
the
mind.
money. It's the money, dude. You hear bookstore and you think you're gonna pay $20 for every single book in there, and you know you don't know. Maybe some of them $20 books are actually worth $100, right? But you'll never know because you ain't never
You're
gonna
never going
go.
to go to pay 20 to 100. I give you $20 if you're going to give me $100. This is easy math to me. Another hack, I mean, Mike's talking about $1 a book or $2 a book. Well, if you want cheaper cost of goods, the hack to that is buy it all. And you're now a bulk person. You're not going to pay $1. You're going to pay less than $1. But it comes at a price, and the price of stuff that will not sell. That's another issue to solve. So if you can monetize, figure out a way to monetize the stuff that does not sell for me, I have a couple different ways. I have certain book buyers that will buy dedicated kinds of books, and I have a bookstore. So I have two outlets to get rid of my junk. Another outlet to this is people utilize the buyback programs. That's just a lower, in my opinion, a lower dollar form than what I'm talking about. I get more money doing it my way, but it sits around a little longer. Again, it's a price I chose to do for myself. The buyback companies will pay it as soon as you can ship it out. It's gone. It's out of your life. Mine, it sits in the bookstore, or I got to wait till my little small Rolodex of persons that buy dedicated things comes in the door. I give them the box, then they give them the money, they leave. So those are two big hacks. Bulk to get cheaper cost of goods, and then your junk, have a way to profit the junk. So that not even that is a loss. And those are ways I figured out for myself. There are other ways, maybe even better ways I haven't thought of that somebody else is doing and keeping it to themselves. And hats off to them.
I do think thrifting will remain feasible for the next, you know, infinite amount of time, 10 years plus. But I do think the margins go down. And the problem with that is all the resellers that aren't efficient today when the margins are super high, right? Like, if you're not going to get out of bed to list something that you paid $5 for that's going to sell for 50, like, as the margins go down, you're definitely not going to get out of bed when you pay 10 bucks and it's only going to make you 20 bucks. I think that's the way we're headed. And the people that are going to win are the people that have the processes. So even though the margins go down, right? Like, I know I can still get X amount listed in a day, right? I know I can still source X amount of dollars. And as you go down in margin, currently today, the sell-through on this stuff should go up, right? So if I'm going to pay 10 bucks for something that's going to sell for, you know, 20, well, it better be a guaranteed sale. And I think there's a knowledge gap in reselling that kind of hinders people. And that could be cheating as well. Like, how many different brands or like trends are currently going on that, you know, the majority of resellers are not aware of? Like, we have them all the time in media. We have Dolly Parton, Jimmy Buffett, Toby Keith, Taylor Swift. Like, these are trends that most people think nothing of. But I guarantee every time I see one of those CDs out, I don't even got to look it up.
The other group, they're talking about Martha Stewart. She has a book that's really popular right now because there's some documentary out about her. And it's good money in that. So if you're aware of these trends, like he's saying, the quote-unquote once garbage book, no longer garbage. Big money. So, yeah.
It's the same with, you know, it's a lot. It's more important if you don't sell media, because think about, like, clothing trends. What famous people are wearing, right? What shirts, what brands, things like that. You can't just go into a thrift store blindly anymore. And I'll admit, when I first started, I didn't know nothing about nothing, dude. I go in, I have my phone out, I'm looking everything up, trying to see what it's worth. And now I've developed a knowledge base, and I think all of the knowledge is out there now, no matter what category you sell in, or you can just do the research yourself. You know, God forbid if we just sit down for 10 minutes of our day and just look at sold listings of, you know, vintage t-shirts, Sony DVD players, you instantly level up, instantly.
Right. I'll give a prime example, because I did this just yesterday. This only gonna apply to people actually watching the video. So you should subscribe to the Used Book Guy so you can see where my hands are pointing and what I'm pointing at. Again, that is the Used Book Guy on YouTube. Anyway, I had about 7 stacks of these that were fails for Amazon that I needed to then look at to see if they were good for eBay or not before I put them out in the storefront. Now, I could have looked every single one of those ones up on eBay, but I've been doing this a minute, and I know what I don't need to look up and what I do need to look up and what I don't need to look up that I already know that sold or will sell, because there are a couple Stephen Kings in there. Immediately to the eBay pile. Don't even need to look it up. But some bulk, mass-produced, religious books produced in 2019, immediately go into the storefront. And then I had a very small stack. I think I had 7 books left over. We're like, I don't know. So I need to look these up. But eventually, even those 7 over time, just because of knowledge, that 7 becomes 3 to 2 to none as time goes on, the longer you do this, which very much backs up what Mike's saying. If you have a knowledge base, you're going to do less work and save more time, and time is money.
You, at least in my stores, I hear it all day. I go into Goodwill and I hear the stupid eBay dinging of people looking everything up in the thrift stores. Like, you're not making no money. I guarantee it. Like, if you have to sit here and look up every single item you pick up, first off, are you really retaining that information? That's the first thing I would argue. If you just scan something and say, oh, $10 is selling for it, and you just put it back, like, are you really retaining the information of what you just picked up and looked at to even know what brand it is after the next 3 things you just scan mindlessly to see if it's worth it? No, you're not. There's no chance. And back on the topic of cheating with relationships, like, we have to have conversations about what we do in the places we are going. I used to be on the fence where you could be like, well, you kind of could just be, you know, the Lone Ranger and keep to yourself and go in and get out and really not talk. I think it's the complete opposite. I think the people that survive this long term are going to be people that have, you know, supplies coming from the back room of thrift stores. And I know it's one of those things where I ask every single time and I never get in the back room. Well, then keep asking, because clearly you don't have a problem doing it. But if you don't think there's people out there that are in the back rooms, you're 100% wrong. I mean, look at the people we have over in our group. Goodwills, Dollar Trees, Savers, Salvation Armies, Mom and Pops, anywhere and everywhere. Library. We have somebody in the back room. Like, that's crazy to think about the advantage you have when you have one of these connections. And I can attest to it because I have a few of them. You pay less, the quality's better, it's all fresh donations, nobody's touched it, nobody's looked at it. You can never lose in that situation.
So I have another key example of this. I had a woman come out to buy a large amount of books from me because these are books I didn't really want to list on my eBay store. They were valuable, so I decided to do a wholesale deal, more or less, just to get rid of them and get some space back. She came in here. She's new to bookselling, kind of, but I gave her a table of books to start with, and I had multiple more things to give her. So she brought out her laptop and she was literally price comping them one by one, looking them up. And I'm like, I gave this 2 hours. And then I finally told her, you can do this, but I know you're only going to be here for 3 days. And you're going to take X amount of books and be 100% correct. Or you can look at them, make a call, move on to the next book. She heeded my advice and she left with a minivan full of books. And she's making good money doing that. And I told her, in addition to that piece of information, yeah, there you may be wrong, but the amount of times you're wrong versus correct doesn't matter. And you can put the wrong ones together and make a lot out of that. There's no way you're going to lose money on even the things you were wrong on if you play it smart. And I think that's the thing. You got to think about cheating. How do you get your time back? What gets you your time? I think that is our most precious asset other than cash flow. Cash flow is the king. But beneath the king, there is your time. And that also is adjacent to cash flow. Because if you can get your time to reinvest in more profitable things on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour, day-by-day basis, you're going to make more money, which produces more cash flow, honestly. And these are things I constantly run through my brain. Like moving a pad of paper on my desk versus having it in a storage cabinet that I got to walk to. Those are seconds saved. I think about in those minute details, because all those minute details add up to me, at least. Maybe my brain's broken, but that's just how I think.
It's true, right? If you, I guess it's cheating. If me and you do the same task, but you have like this little hack where you save X amount of time over me every single time, like, of course, I'm never going to, you know, be able to pump out the same amount as you. And I guess that coincides with going back to relationships. It's not just, you know, thrift stores, it's other people in the reselling community. Like, I thought about this when I first kind of took the plunge into YouTube and everything. Like, If you message somebody, nobody's going to message you back. Like, if you have a question, nobody's going to answer you. And I think it's the complete opposite. I think everything is out there that needs to be out there. Every content creator, no matter how big or small, you ask a question, you're going to get a response. I mean, it's crazy to me that we have all the resources at the palm of our hands and we still find ways to not succeed. Like, we're like the bane of our own existence for some reason. We can't get past ourselves to actually get results. And I think a lot of it is you just think you know it all, or you think your process is the best, but there's always a way to improve upon that. And I'm not saying your process today sucks, like what you do, you suck at resale. And I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, how can we get smarter? There's always improvements to be made in the
Yes.
business. And you know, I'm the first one for it. If it's going to save me time, time is money, so you're saving me money and it actually makes sense. There ain't nothing wrong with hopping on somebody else's gravy train. I'm all for it. Listen, anybody listening, commenting, I'm all for your secret sauce. Lay it on me, because if it's going to make me some more money and save me some time, so I'll change everything up. I don't care.
Yeah, and since he's already made this publicly known, I'll mention that Mr. Tech and Sports, we've had on the podcast before, runs the Reseller Greatness Group, which I'm also a part of. He was very successful, but he was very lone wolf. He didn't level up his business multiple folds until he started networking and talking and coming into the community. He said that was the biggest thing that impacted his business that he did. I mean, he would have been just fine, just staying as is in the back. He would have made a good amount of money just doing that. But when he came to light and started talking to like-minded individuals, or even us lessers down here like myself, that he said publicly before that was the level up change for him, because you get new pieces of information. He listens to every single call, even in niches that don't apply to him in his own group. There's like 30 calls. There's a lot of calls to listen to. But if you immerse and embrace yourself and saturate yourself in knowledge about the reselling market as a whole, again, that's a good hack, because you can pull something from a jewelry seller, you can pull something from a toy seller. Now, don't make that too expensive doing no work.
I'm
Have it
gonna
on
say.
in the background, and your ass needs to be working while you're listening to all of this. But knowledge is power, very much so. And you can apply, I have applied methodologies like storage systems from other people that aren't in media, but it applies to me as a reseller, because I have to deal in storage, but in my own way. So I could take that knowledge, reverse engineer it, and make it applicable for myself. I win. And that's what we got to do. We got to become winners.
It's you make it sound so easy, but the problem is
No,
anybody
it's
can
not.
start a reselling business, right? So like the majority of resellers have zero business experience or like business management, I guess. Like I kind of got lucky working in retail and being a store manager at CVS for, you know, 10 years. Like when you're knee deep in it, you kind of understand like a company's expectations, a P&L, like how productive are you being with your days, with your time. But the reality is most resellers are just, you know, we're a bunch of ragtag bandits that go around thrift stores and, you know, scalp things, and we really don't have the business sense. And I think you got to have the business sense to win. I think the days of just walking in thrift stores and just sniping 500 items every single day you go out and thrift are gone. So like you have to be understandable of like business numbers, what's working for you, how much are you making, what's losing you money, what's wasting time. And I got a cheat a big cheat one is I still forget how the saying goes. Take the quick penny over the long dime, or whatever the hell the saying is. Take the quick nickel over the long quarter. I mean, it's something along those lines, Johnny. And
I'm
every
not
time I
helping
say,
you. This is fun.
if you can take the quick money, you got to take it every single time in this business. I'll stand by that. Unless something is really collectible and there's a really limited, you know, amount of these out there, and you know eventually it's going to sell. All this junk we sell, especially us media sellers, and you know, it applies to any category, you know, used clothing. If somebody's going to send you an offer on eBay, take it every single time. I don't think there's any other way around this. I think that, oh, I don't have offers because I get nothing but low balls. Like, you're just, unfortunately, if that's you, then like You're just crybaby and you're never going to get sales.
And because I care more about the audience than you, it's actually the fast nickel and the slow dime is the quote. And that's very much true. Sell-through rate. You can have a whole shelf of grail items and you're gonna sell maybe two a year. Or you could have a $30 less store and sell out your entire inventory every 30 days, 90 days, whatever your metric may be. I'd rather do the former model, even though that Grail store sounds cool and fun. I rather make money consistently than inconsistently. Now, if you marry the two, there's a good deal right there. You'll sell the cool stuff every now and then, but you'll sell consistently this lower $30 stuff or less. But with the numbers and inflation and fees going on, that $30 less store then becomes the $40 less store, then $50 less store. We also have to keep these minds with the changing market. I went to the grocery store. I bought a gallon of milk, an 8-pack of those Nestle ice cream crunch bars that have the chocolate at the end of the cone, which are super delicious, and a bag of chips. Cost me $19.98 for three items. $20. And I remember when I was a little boy, those same three items would cost you under 10. So 10 years later, 15, 20 years later, we're almost double. It's ridiculous. Three items, three for 20 bucks.
Many, many moons ago, when I was an everything eBay seller, if something was sitting around for more than like a month, like I don't care if any offer came through, Johnny, even if I like barely broke even, I'm taking it. It wasn't even up for debate. Like, how do people let this junk sit in their house, in their garage, in their storage unit for months and months and months and never make the effort to run markdowns, send out offers, or even have offers on to begin with? At some point, it's worth getting the dollar you spent, just getting your dollar back, right? You
Yeah.
just take your same money. Yes, you tried, it didn't work out. But in the majority of the cases, if you have any kind of knowledge when you're thrifting, the majority of the items work out. But like he said earlier, you got to get rid of the stuff that doesn't work out. But people will just keep things listed. I finally sold something after it was listed for 3 years. I think to myself, like, you had this thing listed sitting in your house for 3 years? Like, that's crazy talk.
Oh, here's a prime example because I had, at the beginning of the year, I had 11,500 listings. Now, I've sold stuff between now and what May 12th for the people listening. So, January, 11,500 items in my eBay store. So, between sales and us ripping out items to either go to the storefront because I've listed some junk myself earlier on because I was learning and or go to Amazon. As of this recording, and it's only going to shrink because we're not done yet. We are at a glorious 7,115 items. That's how small my eBay store is now. And we're not done gutting it because I'm getting rid of junk. I'm getting rid of stuff that won't sell because my eBay model is changing drastically. And we do put very little work into eBay days outside of can it go to Amazon? Yes, no. If no, goes to the storefront. Is this a item we know we'll sell at our eBay store now that we have a better understanding of our business and how eBay works? Okay, we'll leave it alone and leave it into eBay. If it's not good for eBay, not good for Amazon, to the storefront that little critter goes. And that's where some country town folk person will hopefully buy it. So, to Mike's point, what do you got on your shelf? How can you get rid of it and still get a little bit of money? Because the storefront, I get a little bit of money. I do. I get my money back. It's exactly what he's saying. Get your money back. Don't take an L and burn it or donate it. Unless you absolutely need the space, it's preventing you from an opportunity over here, then sure, get rid of it then. But if you got the space, figure out a way, find somebody, maybe put all your junk into a lot and put those lots cross-listed on a Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, and good old eBay. First one to buy it wins, and you win because it's gone. So, what are you buying? I mean, we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the high level call. Re-examine what you're buying, even in bulk. I have outlets now. I didn't when I first started. I had just had bulk and I had tubs of junk over there. It took me a while to figure out how to resolve the junk issue. And once I did, it was probably the best decision I've made personally. I'm done rambling now, Mike. You may have the microphone back.
I got another eBay story from my eBay days, and it's funny because I seen a pair of these shoes in the thrift store the other day, and I took a picture and sent them to Deb. When I used to sell everything on eBay, there was this brand of like nursing shoes. They're called Danskos. And we used to sell a lot of these, and we used to be able to pick them up for cheap because these things new, some of them go for well over $100. And I was in a thrift store the other day and I seen a pair, and there's a bunch of knockoffs and everything now. You really can't tell the difference unless you flip them over and look at the brand. And they were Danskos, and they were only $6. Like, if you're selling shoes, like, they're a real nice pair. It's probably like a $30, $40 pair of Danskos. So I remember when I closed my everything eBay store, I had this pair of Danskos, dude, probably for 2 years. And it was the greatest feeling ever just donating those, because I was to the point where I'm like, this is a good quality brand. I relisted it multiple times. It didn't sell. And I think to myself, I only had like a few bins full of stuff. I think of some of these eBay sellers that have garages full of thousands and thousands of items. Like, how many dead items are sitting in people's eBay stores? It's probably a lot more than we think, because how many people are going back, Johnny, and looking at what's the market right now for Dansko, right? Like, that could have been it. Maybe the market has just completely tanked on that brand. I don't know no better, right? I'd just go to the thrift store, I look it up and I list it, and time passes. Like, things change. And how I mean, what do you think the percentage of somebody's eBay store that has 1,000+ items is dead inventory that's just not going to sell? 20?
I think it's higher, man. I think we're somewhere south of 40, honestly, because you just hit the nail on the head. There was something that was a consistent seller, but all of a sudden it's not. So they had good items, and then those items transformed to not good items, or a trend took off, and this is out of fashion again. Speaking on a clothing perspective, because this happens in clothing, because I hear about it, because I'm in a group with primary clothing sellers. But then it'll have a resurgence at some point. But that period of time between that resurgence, and you don't know when that resurgence is going to be, it's just sitting there, and it's not going to sell or sell very little. And that's occupying space that could otherwise be occupied by things that will always sell or what's in trend today.
You don't have enough time in a day to go back and like revisit every single brand you have sitting in your tubs either. So it's like at that point, you just have to mark things down and kind of blow them out. And I don't know. We're going to wrap it up here when it comes to cheating and reselling. Have relationships, have conversations. And it's funny when Tekken Sports goes to these random flea markets and he's got hookups, because all he said was, "Hey, you got any more
You got
Lululemon?"
any
And the
more?
dude's like, "Yeah,
Yeah.
come back." Like, wow, what a
It's
life hack.
backroom access to the flea markets, what
Oh
that
my
is. Love
God,
that.
my brain exploded. He asked somebody if they had more. He's just insane. Like, I could never do that. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? He can
Even my
ask.
library I went to, I'm like, same deal. I can go pick stuff out of the storefront that's not part of the sale. Yes, sir, you can. How about the back room there? Yes, sir, you can. Great. And I'll take everything that hasn't sold to the library sale. Thank you, ma'am. I'll see you next in 6 months.
Listen, I'm no who's like the sexiest man alive currently? Like,
David Hasselhoff.
Paul Rudd. Deb said Paul Rudd. All right. I don't look like no Paul Rudd at the end of the day, but I'm still willing to at least have a conversation with whoever I'm checking out with. And listen, the Goodwills are probably going to tell you to pound sand, but Johnny B's little bookshop, all right, all of a sudden you start giving them some money. They're selling stuff they had no intentions or probably could ever even get to, because the amount of inventory some of these places have, you instantly level up. And I know it sounds stupid, but you have one of these supplies that has thousands and thousands of the items you're looking for. And I've had it work out where some of my backroom locations actually get the stuff from the backroom of a larger thrift store that I would go to. So, like, all of a sudden I had this whole connection of just reliable supply, and then you automatically win. So don't think like you got to walk in there and you got to look like Paul Rudd or, whatever hot the sexiest woman alive is. Deb, you got a sexiest woman for us? She don't know. Johnny?
Tina Turner.
Tina Turner. You don't got to look like Tina Turner or Paul Rudd. that
Tina Turner in the 60s. Let's go.
I
with
will
that.
say this though, right? Don't go in there like a scalper, you know, being all, you know, pompous and rude. Hey, you know, I got a small business. I sell things online. That's kind of like, it's a reasonable way to start a conversation. And once you have one of these libraries, one of these thrift stores, you'll be like, I need more of this because now I don't have to rely on coming in and rolling the dice every single time, hoping I find something to sell. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. We appreciate you watching it on YouTube, listening anywhere where podcasts are available. And we'll talk to you in next week's episode.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Resellers Mindset Podcast. Today's full episode and all previous episodes are available to all YouTube members, along with the weekly Zoom call and private Discord. Head on over to youtube.com/theusedbookguy and consider joining for as little as $2.99 a month.